and it was like I could practically sense her struggle before she picked it up and took a sip. I took a sip of my own to give me some courage, then blurted out, "I'm so sorry, Palmer." She looked back at the stage, where the director was now standing next to Tom, gesturing big, while Tom nodded and scribbled notes in his script.
"What are you sorry about?"
she asked, not looking at me.
"That you lied to me about what was happening with Bree and Wyatt? That you asked my boyfriend to keep lying to me?
You don't think I wanted to tell you?"
"But you told Clark,"
Palmer said, looking at me evenly. "I did," I said quietly, knowing there was no way out of this. "But we have to fix this, P."
"Yeah,"
Palmer said quietly, reaching for her drink but just holding it for a moment and rolling it between her palms.
"But I don't know if we can."
I sat back in my seat. This was what I'd been worried about, when I'd even allowed myself to go there. But hearing her say it was something else. The fact that she wasn't seeing the best and looking on the bright side was almost more than I could take.
"What are you saying?"
I asked, my voice coming out unsteady.
"That we're all just done? Friendship over?"
She took a long drink and then set her cup back down.
"I don't know."
"Okay,"
the director yelled, walking back down to the auditorium from the stage.
"We're picking it up from Duncan's line, people. Let's go."
"I have to do this," Palmer said, picking up her pencil again and flipping a few pages back in her script binder. I nodded and shouldered my bag, but didn't leave yet. I still didn't know where we stood, and the thought of leaving with things so unsettled was making me feel panicky.
"So," I started, then hesitated. "Are we okay?"
Palmer looked over at me for a moment before looking back at the stage.
"I'm not sure," she finally said.
I nodded, swallowing hard.
"Okay,"
I said as I stood up. I paused there for just a moment when I realized there was nothing else to say. I walked up the aisle to the back of the auditorium, looking at the stage one last time, where Tom and the camp director were starting the scene over again, having made their adjustments, trying to get it right this time. The afternoon dragged on, one of the worst of the summer, time seeming to crawl. I ended up just driving around aimlessly, from flasks to the beach to the orchard, but no place felt right, and I didn't stay in any of them for more than a few minutes. I couldn't go home because Peter was there. I couldn't hang out with any of my friends. Two of my constants had vanished, and I was getting more agitated with every hour that passed. I didn't know what my life looked like if we weren't all still friends. It was a reality I couldn't even fully grasp. For the last 5 years, it had been the four of us, what I had always believed to be an unshakable unit. The thought of not having them, the thought of some reality I might have to accept where I didn't have them, was making me feel like I wanted to scream, cry, and throw up all at the same time. These feelings were reaching a boiling point when I pulled into Clark's driveway to walk Birdie. I was angry and on the verge of tears, always a dangerous combination. A tiny voice in the back of my head was whispering that I should just leave, come back later, that I was spoiling for a fight and in no condition to see anyone, much less Clark. But I ignored it and got out of the car, heading up the walkway and letting myself in the side door.
"Bert!"
I called as I stepped inside the house. The dog was standing in the kitchen, giving me his biggest doggy smile. His tail was wagging so hard his butt was shaking back and forth.
"Now, Birdie," I said, in a tone that was intended to let him know I meant business.
I don't want to do this today. But Birdie didn't seem to pick up on any of this, and as I took a step closer, he did a little leap into the air and galloped out of the room. When Clark did Birdie's inner thoughts, in a voice Bree had told me sounded like a decent Jimmy Stewart impression, he always said,
"The game, Andy. It's afoot."
When Birdie jumped like that and went running off. Normally, this routine cracked me up, since Birdie always seemed so pleased with himself, like he was sure he was getting something over on us. But today, it was just irritating me. "Stupid dog," I muttered, as I walked into the kitchen, getting his leash from the cupboard and making sure I had enough plastic bags with me, then slamming the cupboard door harder than I needed to.
"Hi, you,"
Clark said, standing in the kitchen doorway. He had the rumpled, unfocused look that I had learned meant he'd been writing all day, his eyes bleary behind his smudged glasses. I made myself look away from him, back down to Birdie's leash, which I was coiling in a loop.
"Hey,
how are you doing?" Clark asked, walking over to me. He wasn't asking it in the rhetorical way, where you don't even really expect an answer. He was asking it in the careful way you ask people who've just suffered a loss or undergone a trauma. After all, he knew the bare bones of what was happening. I'd texted him the situation that morning. I shrugged, then shook my head. "Not so good." Clark reached out for my hand, but I took a step back from him and picked up Birdie's leash.
"I have to take him out," I said, looking away from Clark.
"Birdie, now!" I yelled, willing the dog to listen to me just this once.
"Hey,"
Clark said, taking a step toward me. He wrapped his arms around me, and for a moment I leaned against them and let my eyes close. There was a piece of me, a big one, that just wanted to let everything out, to hug him back, to cry on his shoulder, to tell him everything and talk about it together. Things always seemed a little better once I talked to Clark about them. And he'd tell me that everything was going to be okay. But that thought jerked me out of the fantasy, as appealing as it was. Because everything very possibly wasn't going to be okay. I broke away from him and picked up Birdie's leash. I saw a flash of hurt cross Clark's face, but I made myself look away from it. I took a breath to yell for Birdie again at the moment he came barreling into the kitchen, nails scrabbling on the wooden floors. Clark reached out for him, and so did I, and we managed to corral him between the two of us. I snapped on his leash, then straightened up.
"See you in a few,"
I said, realizing that it would probably be best to put some distance between us, just so I could try to get my emotions under control and stop this powder keg feeling that was getting stronger by the minute.
"I'll come with you,"
Clark said, giving me a full dimple smile.
"I could use a break anyway."
I didn't know how to tell him that I wanted to be alone, especially since I wasn't sure that was what I wanted. After all, I'd been alone all afternoon and had hated it. So I gave him something between a shrug and a nod and headed out the front door, half running behind Birdie, who was straining as hard as he could against the leash. We stepped outside, and I was about to pull out my keys, but Clark was already locking the door with his set. I saw him reach down for my hand and quickly transferred Birdie's leash to that hand. I was feeling that if I really let Clark touch me for too long, if I let myself feel everything I was feeling, I would be venturing into dangerous territory, where if I started to cry in front of him, I wasn't sure when I'd stop.
"So, what's been happening?"
he asked, after we'd walked for a few seconds in silence, Birdie bounding ahead, trying to sniff four things at once, then doubling back to smell what he might have missed.
"Any change?" No, I said, feeling the weight of the word even as I said it, like a bowling ball dropping into my stomach. I took a shaky breath, then let it out. I'm not sure, I started, then had to make myself go on, say the rest of the sentence. I'm not sure we're going to come back from this. Clark looked over at me, a furrow appearing between his brows.
Of course you are,
he said, but I could hear the worry creeping into his voice as well.
I mean, you guys are best friends. You're not going to fall apart over this. You'll get past it.
We might not, okay? I snapped, and my voice was sharp and spiky. I bit my lip. I'm sorry, I said, looping Bertie's leash around my wrist and then unlooping it. I'm just... Taking it out on you flashed through my head before I could stop it.
So,
Clark said, looking over at me, and I could see the same realization I'd been having all morning was dawning for him as well. And he looked just as happy about it as I was.
It's just over? All of us this summer? It's just... gone?
I could hear the hurt in his voice, and I knew that he was also losing his friends. But he'd known them for 2 months, not years and years, and there was a piece of me that didn't want to accept that he would be hurt by this too. I shook my head, not trusting myself to speak just then. Bertie stopped by his favorite tree, and Clark stopped as well, reaching out for my other hand.
Andy, I'm here. It's okay.
I looked up at him, at the sunlight filtering through the trees and landing across his face, and I wanted to tell him everything I was feeling. I wanted to have someone I could talk to about this, someone who would face this, however it turned out, alongside me. But I couldn't rely on Clark to help me, just like I couldn't rely on my dad. Clark was leaving in just a few weeks, and I never should have let myself forget that, not for a moment. Both of them were heading out the door any minute now. I couldn't tell Clark what I was feeling, couldn't get used to him in my life like this, because at the end of the summer he would leave, and then I'd be truly alone. I don't know why you're so upset about this, I said, even though I knew it wasn't fair. I mean, you're going to leave in a couple weeks anyway. Bertie, done with his tree, started walking again, and I looked over at Clark, expecting him to be angry or hurt. But he was giving me a small, nervous smile, putting his hands in his pockets and then taking them out again.
Actually, he said, then took a deep breath. I wanted to talk to you about that.
Talk to me about what?
Me staying here.
My head snapped up and I stared at him, pulling back against the leash harder than I needed to, sending Bertie stumbling back a few steps.
What?
I started, then shook my head. What do you mean? Here at the house? As far as I'd understood it, Clark's arrangement with his publisher had been just for the summer. I was sure of it.
No.
Clark said.
I mean, not going back to Colorado. I was thinking about going to Stanwich College, taking some classes. I emailed the dean about it last week. I really should be in college now anyway, and that way I could stay around here.
He gave me a shy half-smile, and there was such open, aching vulnerability in it that I had to force myself not to look away.
So, what do you think?
He was nervous. I could hear it in his voice. A part of me wanted to tell him what great news this was, let myself be happy about it. This was what I'd wanted, wasn't it? An answer to what was going to happen to us at the end of the summer? But another part of me, a bigger part, felt myself pulling away. Backing up, slamming all the doors tightly, because it was one thing for Clark to be here for a season, but this was already the longest relationship I'd ever had. Did I really think I was going to be able to keep this up for months and months longer? I'd already managed to wreck the best friendships I'd ever had. Of course I would wreck this, too. At some point, he'd see who I really was, and then it would be over, and I'd be worse off than I was now. So I pushed down what I was really feeling, all the hurt and hope and fear, and reached for anger instead.
"Were you even going to ask me about this?"
I asked, walking a few steps away from him, pulling Bertie's head up from where he'd been straining to get to a particular rock, knowing I wouldn't be able to say these things if I had to look at Clark's face.
"I thought you'd be happy," he said. "I thought the other night, when you brought it up."
I could hear the confusion in his voice, but I made myself push on anyway.
"Maybe I just want someone to ask me what I want, for once. Maybe I just want someone to consult me before there's another huge change that impacts me."
I started walking faster. I was feeling reckless and angry and like I was just going to keep going down this road I was pretty sure I didn't even want to be on.
"I thought that's what I was doing,"
Clark said, shaking his head.
"I was talking to you about it."
Clark stopped walking. I stopped too, and Bertie took the opportunity to start sniffing our shoes, weaving in and around our legs.
"So, you don't want me to stay?"
I could hear how hurt Clark was, how he wasn't even trying to hide it, wasn't masking his feelings and running away from them like I was. We looked at each other, and it was very quiet. No cars on the road, just the birds in the trees, a far-off lawnmower, the dog snuffling at our feet. I could feel that we were at a threshold, that things could go different ways from here, but that a gauntlet had been thrown, and we wouldn't, at this point, be able to go back to where we'd been 20 minutes before. That things had changed, were changing, right now. That a decision had to be made. And even as I looked at him in the sunlight, with his face that had become so precious to me, with his kindness and his humor and his patience, with him holding his heart out to me so bravely, I felt myself backing away. Him? This? Everything it would mean to continue with this was too scary. It was too much. I would hurt him in the end, and he would hurt me much worse than either of us were hurting now. So I made myself say it, knowing that deep down it was probably the truth. "I don't think it would work out."
"What are you saying?"
Clark asked, his eyes searching mine, like he could find the truth in them, find what I was really feeling behind the walls I was putting up as fast as I could. "This was always supposed to be for the summer, right? That's what I thought." I looked away from him, down at Bertie, so he wouldn't see the tears that were forming in my eyes.
"Andy, this isn't you."
"It is, though," I said, fighting back the sob that was forming somewhere in the back of my throat. "Our first date?" I asked, and he nodded. "That was me. We can pretend to be different people for a few months, but..." I flashed to my dad, back in his work uniform like nothing had happened, like the entire summer we'd spent could just be erased. "In the end, people don't change who they are." I could hear the conviction in my voice as I said this, and as I looked across at Clark, I saw that he was finally starting to believe me. Bertie flopped down on the ground between us, his head resting on my feet and his tail on Clark's. But despite how close we were, I could feel a gulf splitting open between us, widening and widening with every passing second.
"Do you really believe that?"
he asked, and I knew this was his last shot, His last attempt, my final chance to change our course. I nodded, swallowing hard.
I do.
Clark looked away, down the road. When he turned back to me, I could see that he was suddenly farther away from me now, even though he hadn't actually moved. There was a distance in his eyes that hadn't been there a moment before.
It's probably for the best, he said,
his voice still raw but getting more composed with every word.
I mean, I have a lot of work to do. I should probably focus on my book now, anyway.
I nodded, wondering why it hurt me so much to hear him say it when this was my idea, and I was the one bringing it about.
Right, I said, nodding, hoping what I was feeling wasn't clear in my voice.
Sure. I pulled Birdie to his feet, and we started walking back toward the house. More space between us than before. We were practically on opposite sides of the road. Neither of us was speaking, and Birdie was walking between us, happily sniffing, not aware that anything had changed. For him, things were still the same, sun and grass and things to smell, while Clark and I were standing in the rubble of what only minutes ago had been our relationship. The silence seemed to get more oppressive with every step, until I was sure I wouldn't be able to handle it for much longer. It was like the silence in the car after our first disastrous date, but exponentially worse, since I knew him now, knew who he was, how much he'd meant to me, and exactly what I was walking away from. When we reached the driveway, I stopped, having reached my limit.
Here,
I said, holding out Birdie's leash to him, glad that I had my keys in my pocket and that he had his own, and we didn't have to continue this into the kitchen and have what had the potential to be the world's most awkward goodbye. Clark took it from me. Birdie didn't even seem to notice the handoff, just sat down and started scratching his ear with his back paw.
I'll tell Maya someone else needs to start walking him now.
Clark just looked at me for a moment and gave me a smile with no happiness in it.
It's not necessary, he said. I can walk, Bert. I mostly just called Maya because I was hoping to see you again.
It felt like someone had reached into my chest and squeezed my heart, and this continued as he turned away and walked toward the house, Birdie trailing behind him. As I watched them go, my throat got tighter, like it was getting harder to breathe. Was this really how it was going to end? Without saying anything else? Without even getting to hug Birdie one last time?
Clark!
I called, when he was almost to the door. He turned back to me slowly, keys still in his hand, his expression wary.
What happens?
I blurted before I could stop myself.
With Carl and Marjorie.
It was such a small thing compared to everything that had just happened, but it was a world we had built together, and I needed to know. Clark looked at me for a moment, then unlocked the door. I thought for a second he was going to ignore me. But then I saw him unclip Birdie's leash and let him in before he turned and crossed the driveway toward me, stopping when there were still several feet between us.
You really want to know? He asked.
Yes.
Well, Marjorie kills Carl.
I drew in a breath. It felt like someone had just pressed on a bruise.
What?
Oh, yeah,
Clark said, his voice certain, like this was the only answer, like there was no other way this could go.
She finally remembered that she was an assassin. She was just pretending to be someone else, but in the end it wasn't who she was.
Clark's voice was cold and dispassionate, and I had never heard him speak that way before. When I thought about the gentle way he'd talked to me when I'd first arrived at the house, not even an hour before, I knew that he sounded this way because of me, that I was the one who'd done this to him. I bit my lip hard and felt tears, the ones that had been lurking behind my eyes, threatened to emerge. "No," I managed, shaking my head. But before I could say more, Clark was continuing on.
"And then Marjorie dies too," he said, folding his arms over his chest. "After she kills Carl. The King's men kill her at a tavern. They can't have her talking. It's best to just erase the evidence so it's like it never happened. The end."
"You can't just do that."
Clark looked at me for a long moment. "I just did," he said, then turned and walked back up the driveway, then into the house, letting the door slam behind him.
I walked to my car, and my hands were shaking so hard it took 2 attempts to get my key in the ignition, and it wasn't until I'd gotten the car started and driven 2 streets away that I pulled over and really let myself cry. Chapter 18. Maya looked at me from across the table at Flask's, concern on her face that didn't seem to match her purple and pink hair. She pushed aside her blended coffee drink, pumpkin spice. It was the last week of August, but apparently, as far as Flask's was concerned, that meant it was fall.
"How are you doing?" she asked, leaning toward me.
"I'm fine," I said automatically, taking a drink of my iced latte, since this was just what I said now. It was what I told my dad when I passed him in the kitchen or the hallway. We weren't doing our Sundays in the study with movies anymore, and we hadn't had a dinner, just the two of us, since Peter had appeared in the kitchen. My dad was busier now, but he was still suggesting places we could eat and threatening to make me watch more westerns. But I had a feeling he was just going through the motions. And even though he kept telling me he hadn't decided if he was running again, I could read the writing on the wall. So I found a way out of everything he proposed. I told him I was busy, that I had plans with my friends, that I had to work. I didn't want to fall back into the habit of spending time with him like he was going to be around, when clearly he had 1 foot out the door. It had been 2 weeks since my friends and I had imploded, 2 weeks since Clark and I had broken up, and it felt more like months. For the first few days, I was texting everyone, both on our group thread and individually. But when the silence became deafening, I stopped. The silence of my phone just underscored how alone I was now. I could sometimes get Tom to text me back, but never for very long. He was clearly worried he was being disloyal to Palmer, and quickly told me he had to go. I'd gone to the opening night of Bug Juice alone, sitting by myself in the back row, looking around for my friends but not seeing them. Barely paying attention to the play as I scanned the theater for Clark. Sure, I saw him dozens of times before the guy would turn his head and I'd realize it wasn't him. And then feeling like an idiot for thinking it could have been. But the whole show had run smoothly, and I'd been so proud of Palmer, sitting in the sound booth, pulling it off without a hitch. I'd told Maya I had to stop walking Birdie, and to make up for it, and to distract myself from my friendless state, I'd been taking on as many clients as she could give me. I was out of the house every morning early, with extra leashes and plastic bags and treats, and didn't return until early evening, tired and sunburned. And then, at night, I'd work my way through my organic chemistry textbook, trying not to notice how little I was interested in it any longer. Telling myself firmly that this was normal, that nobody liked organic chemistry.
"Really?" Maya asked, her brows knitting together. because I'm worried you've taken on too much. I can take over some of these walks, or Dave can. It's summer, after all. You should be out having fun with your friends.
I had to bite my lip to keep from wincing.
Right, I said hollowly.
My friends.
I busied myself with carefully folding the flask's paper napkin into a perfect square.
Well, she said with a shrug, leaning back in her chair. Make sure you go have fun tonight. Dave and I are doing payroll, which is a blast. So have a good time before you have to worry about things like that.
Maya and I headed our separate ways shortly after that, but what she'd said kept returning to me throughout the evening, while I ate my takeout dinner alone and then tried, without success, to go through a chapter in my O-Chem study guide. And it was Maya's words, coupled with severe boredom and loneliness, that led me to reach for my phone and scroll through my contacts until I got to Topher.
Me.
Hey.
You around?
Topher.
It's about time.
I pushed open the door and stepped inside the party, smoothing my hair down and looking around. Topher had told me he would be here later. A friend of his from school was throwing this party. He'd neglected to inform me the friend's name, just dropped a pin on the address, so I was hoping that nobody would ask me what I was doing there before I could find him. Topher's later could mean many things, and he never seemed to get any more specific. In fact, usually the opposite, when you pressed him for clarification. So, I'd gotten ready, then stalled for an hour before heading over, hoping I'd waited long enough, but not really caring all that much if I hadn't. Even though this party looked just like dozens of parties I'd been to, I was out of the house, which was enough for me at the moment. I didn't see Topher, or anyone I recognized, but I wasn't worried about that. Not yet. If Topher still hadn't shown up in an hour, it would be a different story. But I could cross that bridge when I came to it. I caught my reflection in a hall mirror as I headed back to the kitchen and smoothed down my skirt. It had just felt wrong, getting ready to come here tonight in silence, with no video commentary, no Palmer sprawled across my bed vetoing outfits, no text chains about what I should wear. And it was equally strange to walk in with no group around me, trying to pretend I belonged there and knew where I was going. I found myself looking around for my friends automatically, even though I knew they probably wouldn't be here, and wouldn't be talking to me if they were. I made my way into the kitchen, where an array of bottles and red cups were scattered along the countertop, and pulled the Diet Coke bottle out of my bag. Now that I was pretty sure my dad was running again, I figured I couldn't be too careful. It was also, I realized as I opened the bottle and took a long drink, not a bad idea for me to just stick to soda, since I was at a party, or maybe the first time ever, with no backup. My eyes drifted out to the back patio, where there was a pool, half filled with people, and what looked like a guy passed out on the diving board. And there, sitting in an Adirondack chair, was Topher. For a second, I thought about trying to catch his eye, wait for him to notice me, do this same routine we always did. But only for a second, before I left the kitchen and headed outside. I walked up to his Adirondack chair, where he was leaning back, a bottle of Sprite in one hand, listening with a faint smile on his face as the guy in the chair next to him was leaning forward, saying something about galaxies.
"For years, man,"
he was saying, gesturing vaguely up to the sky and spilling some beer on his own arm.
"They've thought the galaxies were just fixed, done, boom, that's it. These perfect orderly systems, right?"
"Who's they?" Topher asked, in a way I knew from experience meant he didn't really want to know, but had just seen a flaw in an argument.
Astronomers, the guy said, gesturing again, sending more beer flying. At this rate, he'd be out before he was done talking.
NASA people, you know? They weren't even studying some of them any longer because they thought all that was done 8 billion light years ago. But then they started noticing stuff.
Really? Topher was looking away, not even listening to the guy anymore, but that didn't seem to be stopping him.
Yeah, the guy said. Galaxies don't start perfect. They start crazy disorganized, and they change over time.
He looked at Topher, waiting a beat, clearly expecting more of a reaction.
Doesn't that, like, blow your mind?
Sorry, Topher said, finally noticing me, or at least acknowledging that he noticed me. My friend just got here. Hi, I said, giving the guy a half-hearted wave.
Want to hear this crazy thing about galaxies?
The guy asked, leaning forward again, clearly glad to have found a potential new audience. She's good, Topher said, giving him a nod. Thanks, though. The guy seemed to notice then that he'd lost most of his beer while gesticulating, pushed himself up and headed off toward the keg, still murmuring under his breath about star formations. Hey, I said, adjusting my purse on my shoulder, then folding and unfolding my arms. You made it, Topher said, looking up at me. I was getting worried. I nodded, starting to feel weird standing while he was sitting and making no move to get up, so I took the galaxy guy's seat, settling back into it and looking over at Topher. Really? I said, not phrasing it as a question. Topher gave me a sleepy smile. Sure, he said, in a way that was designed to let me know he was lying and that this was supposed to be funny, that he'd forgotten about me. I gave him a half-smile as I crossed my legs. I could feel it happening, this pattern we always fell back into. But for some reason, it didn't feel like it normally did. It was feeling more like the time Bree accidentally took my shoes after a sleepover, and I had to wear hers all day, aware with every step of how they didn't fit me right. I took a drink of my Diet Coke, waiting for this feeling to pass. It had just been a while since I'd seen Topher, that was all. Things would go back to normal soon. So, what's been happening? I asked, after we'd sat in silence for a few moments. I somehow knew that Topher wouldn't be the first to break it, that he'd wait for me to get the conversation rolling. Once, these kinds of games had made every interaction with him feel somehow exciting. But tonight, they were exhausting me, and I was struggling to remember what the point of them was. You know, Topher said with a tiny shrug, doing the intern thing, beyond thrilling. He looked over at me and frowned. Wait, what did you end up doing again? Dog walking, I said immediately. Topher just stared at me. Some cats, too, but mostly dogs. Walks and hikes.
Are you serious?
He asked, a laugh somewhere behind this. You've really been walking dogs all summer? Yep, I said, nodding. I knew that a month ago I would have lied, or at least spun it, told him that I was working in an assistant capacity at a small, independently owned business in the service sector. But the last thing I wanted to do was to diminish what I'd spent the summer doing. It was actually really great, I said, realizing it was true as I said it, seeing all at once Clark and Birdie and Maya and Dave and walking with two leashes in each hand and the sun on my shoulders, driving back with a dog on my lap and a head sticking out of every open window. Well, Topher said, looking a little discomfited by this,
like I'd just gone off script on him.
I'll take your word for it.
We lapsed into silence again, and before I could think of something else to say, he asked,
"So it's finally over with Clark?"
Topher asked, putting a snide spin on his name.
"Uh-huh,"
I said, not saying it, but really thinking that people named Topher weren't exactly in a position to throw stones.
"So what happened?"
I shook my head, then made myself shrug, trying to force myself back into this role I'd played so often before. Totally over whoever it was I'd been dating, and ready to move on with Topher.
"It doesn't matter," I said. "It's over."
Topher took a sip from his Sprite bottle, eyes still on me, like he was trying to figure something out.
"That lasted a while," he finally said.
"Well," I said, giving him a smile I didn't even partially feel.
"Now it's over."
I looked at him for a moment. Even though we were sitting on outdoor furniture by a pool, Topher looked, as always, beyond cool and composed, like he could have been in an ad for cologne, or Adirondack chairs, or Sprite.
"You?"
I asked, hoping I knew the answer. I had a feeling Topher wouldn't have told me about the party if he was seeing anyone, but I wasn't entirely sure.
"With anyone?"
Topher's smile widened as he shook his head.
"Not at the moment."
I nodded and gave him a smile in return. This was why I'd texted him, after all.
"Want to get out of here?"
The bottom bunk of the little brother of the host, I still didn't know what his name was not the most romantic spot in the world. But when Topher had done a quick recon around the party for our options, this was all that was left. He'd suggested his car, which I knew from experience was a massive SUV with a middle row of seats that folded down, allowing plenty of room to stretch out. But I somehow found I didn't want to leave the party with Topher. Didn't want to feel the fresh air against my skin as we walked to wherever he'd parked, waking me up and making me think about what I was doing. So the bottom bunk of a room that seemed decorated in some kind of dinosaur space mashup was what we were left with. It also wasn't totally dark. When Topher hit the lights, dozens of glow-in-the-dark constellations and a T-Rex nightlight came to life. And as Topher eased me back onto the astronaut sheets and we started kissing, I told myself that this was what I'd been missing all summer. This was who I was, like I'd told Clark, and I never should have veered away from that. I should have stuck with the routine. The one that had been working for me for years now. Trying anything else just hurt that much more when it invariably ended. And I tried to tell myself this was good as I tangled my fingers in Topher's hair, trying to lose myself in our kisses, which could normally make everything else in the world totally disappear. But it was like I was too aware, somehow, of everything that was happening, unable to shut off my thoughts, which were spiraling, the opposite of what I wanted them to be doing. I slipped my hands under Topher's shirt, and he broke away and looked down at me, and in the nightlight glow I could see his surprise that I was breaking my rules. I tried to pull his shirt up, only to have him say, "Ow," and realize a second too late that he was wearing a button-down.
"Sorry,"
I said, stretching up, starting to undo his buttons, fumbling with them in the dark.
"I've got it,"
Topher said, taking it off himself, and I stretched up to kiss him again before reaching down and pulling my own shirt off, tossing the tank top in the direction of my purse.
"Yeah?"
he asked, sounding surprised but not at all displeased as he smiled down at me.
"Sure,"
I said,
then added quickly, I mean, yeah. I pulled him down toward me, and even as we kissed, my skin against his for the first time, I couldn't lose myself in the moment, couldn't shut off the sense that something wasn't quite right. I opened my eyes, realizing at once what it was. There was no laughter here, no playfulness, no Carl and Marjorie getting busy in a barn narrative tangents. No Clark making me laugh about how my bra clasps had all been designed by the same people who made bank vaults since they were impossible to open. This, now, just felt like it always did with Topher. Like it could have been 3 months ago or any other time in the last 3 years. Which, until now, had been fine. It had been what I thought I wanted. But now I knew there was something else, something better, something more. And before I could distract myself or stop the thoughts from coming, I was missing Clark so much it hurt to breathe. I moved back and sat up, pushing Topher away as I tried to get my thoughts in some kind of order.
What? Topher asked, blinking at me. What's the matter?
I'm not sure, I said slowly. I knew what it was, but not how I could put it so that Topher would understand.
Is it that guy? Topher asked, shaking his head as he sat back from me. Seriously?
I looked across the narrow bed at him. The disdain in his voice would have been enough a few months ago that I would have denied it. But I realized, all at once, that I couldn't have cared less about that any longer. Seriously, I said, nodding. Topher let out a short laugh, still looking at me like he was expecting me to go back to who I'd been, start making sense again.
What, were you, like, in love with him or something? He asked sarcastically, phrasing it so that the only answer to this was no.
Yes, I said, without even thinking about it, but knowing as soon as I said it that it was the truth. It had been the truth for a while now, but I hadn't let myself see until this moment. I was. I took a breath and made myself say it. I am.
Oh, Topher said, sounding utterly thrown. Okay.
Yeah, I said with a small laugh. I sat up a little straighter and pulled the sheet up in front of me, tucking it under my arms, my fingers tracing, for just a second, the pattern of the Little Dipper that was printed there. I looked over at Topher and knew that this, whatever we'd been doing for 3 years now, was over. That it was better to have what I'd had with Clark than something like this. I might stay safe with Topher and never get hurt, but that also meant I'd never feel anything real. Sorry, I didn't realize it until right now.
You love him? Topher asked, sounding not cool or dismissive or sarcastic, but for the first time in a long time, genuine.
I could hear the hurt in his voice, but also the confusion underneath. I do, I said, nodding. I wasn't sure what, if anything, I was going to do with that information. But for tonight, knowing it felt like enough. So I think you and I, we're probably...
Yeah, Topher said, pulling on his shirt and buttoning it up. I figured that.
I pulled on my tank top, and then we just looked at each other for a moment, across the comforter with rocket ships printed on it.
I sometimes wonder, he finally said, his voice soft and maybe the most genuine I'd ever heard it, all games and stratagems gone. If maybe in the beginning, I'd just... If we'd actually... He reached forward and brushed his fingers through the ends of my hair slowly, like he knew that soon he wouldn't be able to do this.
"Never mind," he said, shaking his head, some of the briskness coming back into his voice.
He looked away from me and adjusted his cuffs, and when he looked back, I could see the little authentic window he'd shown me was now closed. Topher headed back down to the party after that, and I waited 2 minutes, more out of habit than anything else, before following him. I let myself out the front door and walked to my car, which I'd parked half a mile up the road. It was a breezy night, the humidity cut by the wind, and I took off my flip-flops and held them in one hand as I walked barefoot, tipping my head back to look up at the sky. I remembered the stick-on, glow-in-the-dark stars that had been all over the walls of the kid's bedroom, the ones that looked pretty good until you had the real thing to compare them with. And then they just looked like pale imitations. I thought about the guy outside and his galaxy theory, and as I looked up, I wondered which of these stars, the ones that seemed so permanent and fixed, weren't actually done changing quite yet. The elder shook his head, feeling the weight of each of his years, the wisdom he had that nobody seemed to be able to hear. "You have to try," he said, his voice barely above a whisper. He closed his eyes just for a moment, then opened them, and forced himself to go on. "You have to take your chances. Go and attempt and see what happens. And even if you fail, especially if you fail, come back with your experience and your hard-won knowledge and a story you can tell. And then later you can say without regret or hesitation, 'Once I dared to dare greatly.' C. B. McAllister, The Drawing of the Two, Hightower and Jax, New York."
Chapter 19. Two beeps from my phone sent me bolting upright in bed the next morning, fumbling for it and sending the stack of precarious things on my nightstand crashing to the floor. I squinted at my phone, trying to get my eyes to focus, willing it to be texts from my friends. Maybe Toby and Bree had figured out a way to move past this, and Palmer had decided not to be mad at me any longer. And I felt my shoulders slump when I saw what was actually there. Two calendar reminders that had popped up. "Dad, campaign event, New York, 12 p.m. Clark's reading, New Jersey, 3 p.m. I looked at these, and at the exclamation points by Clark's, realizing that with everything going on, I'd forgotten about both events, and had certainly not put together that they were happening on the same day. As far as I knew, I was not expected to be at my father's event. Peter hadn't said anything, and neither had my dad, so I figured I was in the clear. I flopped back onto my bed, then looked at my calendar for the day, which was totally open. I must have cleared it with Maya for Clark's reading. Now, the thought of having the whole day ahead of me open, especially with my revelation from the night before, was not appealing in the least. I pulled up my texts and started to write Maya, asking her if there were any walks I could take over today. I'd even deal with a cat. When my phone screen turned black, I'd run the battery down. My first thought was that I'd have to tell Toby that I could no longer make fun of her for this, before I remembered, once again, what had happened. I pushed myself out of bed and went downstairs, yawning in my sleep shorts and the Ask Me About the Luminosity shirt of Clark's that I'd never gotten around to returning.
"Morning,"
my dad said as I stepped into the kitchen. He was hovering around the coffee pot, but in a way that made me think he wasn't actually having coffee, and had instead been waiting for me to come down.
"Hi," I said, rubbing my hand across my eyes as I went to the fridge in search of orange juice. He was wearing a button-down shirt and a suit jacket, but no tie. His I'm-professional-but-not-stuffy outfit he always wore when campaigning in the summers. His hair, though, was as sharply parted as ever.
"So," I said, after taking a long drink and waiting for my brain to start waking up. "You have that campaign event today?"
"Kind of," my dad said, giving me a shrug. "It's the governor's campaign. He just wanted me to say a few words."
I nodded as I took another drink of my juice, convinced that even after all these years, I would never understand how politics worked. The governor and my dad had privately hated each other for years, but maybe he was trying to get a piece of my dad's redemption arc. It was all going to start unfolding at a press conference on Monday, with Peter laying out every step of it.
"But there's actually something I wanted to show you,"
my dad said, smiling at me, and I realized he really had been waiting for me to get up.
"Okay," I said, looking around the kitchen.
"Outside,"
my dad said, walking toward the side door.
"Ready?"
"Sure," I said, setting my glass down, utterly baffled as to what this could be. I honestly wasn't sure there was anything I wanted, unless standing on the driveway would be Palmer, Toby, and Bree, all having made up, having forgiven each other and me, along with Clark and Bertie, everything somehow fixed and okay. I stepped outside, and the heat hit me like a slap in the face. "Ugh," I said, wincing. It was boiling already, and humid, like I'd just walked face first into a hot shower.
"Yeah,"
my dad said, grimacing at me.
"It's going to be a hot one today."
"Going to be?"
"Okay, let's go to the garage,"
my dad said, talking fast, sounding excited. I had a sudden Christmas morning flashback of both my parents sitting on the couch, watching me open my biggest present, waiting to see my reaction. But it wasn't Christmas, and it was nowhere near my birthday. So what was this, exactly? I followed my dad to the garage door, which was closed, and I looked around in case I was missing something. But a second later, my dad pulled out the garage door opener from his pocket and took a breath.
"Okay,"
he said, his thumb on the button but not pressing it yet.
"This is something that I hadn't planned on doing just yet, but..."
A loud, low-pitched beep made us both jump, and I looked over to see a bus chugging up to our driveway. It started to turn in, but then stopped and backed up a few feet with a beep, beep, beep sound that seemed unnecessarily loud on our totally quiet street, sending some birds from nearby trees into flight.
"What the heck?"
my dad asked, striding down toward the end of the driveway, sounding annoyed. I followed a few paces behind, and as I got closer, felt my steps slow. There was a giant picture of my dad's face on the bus, taken from his last campaign photo shoot. "Walker for Congress," it read, in giant red and white letters. Underneath this, but only slightly smaller, was printed, "Toward the Future."
"Peter!"
my dad yelled as he walked up to the bus. His face was starting to turn red, and since he'd been fine just a moment before, I had a feeling this was due to the bus and not the heat. The doors opened with a squeak and a sound of air releasing, and a moment later, Peter was striding down the steps and smiling at us.
"Morning,"
he said, then winced.
"Geez, it's hot out today."
Luckily, the bus has AC.
Why is this even here?
My dad asked, staring at it.
When did we decide we were going ahead with this?
We didn't, Peter said